Our governor calls Utah the startup capital of the world. And it tracks. We've got a fast-growing, well-educated population and a buzzing economy. And just last week, Utah unveiled the Startup State Initiative, a resource portal for entrepreneurs. From step-by-step guides to a business plan generator, startup.utah.gov is now the first stop for starting or growing a business here. That's startup.utah.gov. Here is what Salt Lake's talking about. A hot, hot text exchange between two city council members has revealed the truth about how Salt Lake's Major League Baseball bid really came about. Plus, demolition was halted on a local historic building Easter Sunday. What happens now? Executive producer Emily Means is here to help break down the news stories catapulting us into the week. It's Tuesday, April 2nd. I'm Ali Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning, Ali.
Man, we got this story on Friday. These texts between two, in particular, Salt Lake City Council members, and we are going to get all the way into it. But first, I think we have to do a little bit of a how we got here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and how are you, by the way?
Oh, I'm fine. Thanks for asking. I've just been thinking about these text messages all weekend, so.
Yeah, we'll get into how it felt to read them. But let's lay this out, because what these texts were about is the planned Major League Baseball stadium in the Fair Park neighborhood. And that is going to be the focus of this conversation. So for anyone who is new to this idea or who is confused about how we got here, because we've been reporting about the stadium deal for months now, and it's been almost a year in the making, I'm just going to give like my version of the kind of like backstory.
This is the TLDR, too long didn't read.
Yeah. Okay. A while ago, we got news that our minor league baseball team, the Salt Lake Bees, would be leaving Salt Lake City for the suburbs, for the Daybreak neighborhood. They are owned by Larry Miller Company, the Millers, we'll call them. And the ballpark neighborhood where Smith's baseball field currently is, where the Bees played, was kind of like, wait, what? They're leaving. What now? We're just going to leave a gaping hole in the ground? Hello? Around that time, the Millers announced that what they actually want in Salt Lake City is a Major League Baseball team. And they were like, yeah, 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 we're sending the Bees to the South. But here in Salt Lake, we want the MLB. Our name in lights, baby. So they founded this organization called Big League Utah, which like roped in like the governor and some legislators and whatever. It was like kind of a statewide effort to be like, hey, Major League Baseball, you're expanding. You want to add two teams to your repertoire. Consider us. Basically, pick me. The Millers start buying up land in the Power District, which is North Temple near Redwood Road. And they're like, this is where it's going to be. This is where the magic is going to happen. Fortunately, we already own some of this. We're going to own more of this. The legislature this year, seeing all this going down, is like, wow, we love it. We're going to officially endorse this idea with a House resolution. And we're going to recognize Utah as an amazing state for sports and an ideal geographic destination for this baseball expansion. Around this time, we, the people of Salt Lake City, start to get renderings, and they are sexy. It's like the Jordan River is flowing past the stadium, and people are riding their bikes, and it's like we're all sitting outside and drinking cafecitos and having the time of our lives. But some people are like, oh, that's weird. This neighborhood's a food desert. There's no grocery store in these renderings. These renderings came real hot off the press and real quick. Has anyone asked the residents of this neighborhood where this giant stadium would be built and radically transformed into an entertainment district what they want? And the answer was like, yeah, kinda. What? Look over here. So then we start getting think pieces from Trib columnists mostly that are like, is this good? I mean, sports is fun, sports is amazing, but how are we going to fund this? For like a century, we've kind of proven time and time again that when we publicly fund these entertainment franchises, it doesn't do a lot for the people. It does a lot for the owner of the team. And like vibes are high, but in terms of economic opportunity, it's hard to argue that it's like creating a lot of economic opportunity for the neighborhoods that these teams inhabit. And then the kind of final piece that came in, and like, to me, this is like the drone landing on Earth, like sort of where we are now, is the legislature was like, our resolution was not enough. We want to do more. We want to make this about us. And we are going to go through many iterations of a bill in order to do that. And we're going to land with this deal and this decision. We will use various taxing mechanisms to come up with a little under $1 billion to fund this stadium and the surrounding entertainment district. The state will own the land underneath the stadium. And in sort of tribute to that, whatever team we get, if we get a team, has to be named the Utah whatever. So it can't be like the Salt Lake Fishes. It has to be the Utah Fishes. We will create a Fair Park Authority to govern this situation. And the people of the neighborhood will get one seat on that governing authority. And people like you and I, Emily, were like, one seat? What? That doesn't seem like very much input, given that you're going to radically, quote unquote, transform their entire neighborhood.
That's pretty good, Allie. Although one change I would suggest, like you said, this bill went through many iterations, and it was in that first iteration that there was just one seat for the city. In the final version of the bill, two seats for the city.
You're right.
But that first iteration is kind of where Blake Apgar from the Salt Lake Tribune has put out this juicy story, because he records requested text messages from the Salt Lake City Council in response to that first iteration of that bill, paving a path for this sports district on the west side. And, you know, we, Allie, you and I, were riled up about it. And we're not even, you know, like city officials. We're just regular schmegular people in the city, right? And
right.
So,
like most Salt Lakers, we are on the other side of the door where these conversations are happening. And then people come outside and they're like, well, we talked about it and you guys are going to love it. It's so good for you. See you later.
Right. So these text messages reveal that two council members in particular were not happy about how this bill turned out when it was first revealed to us. Councilmember Darren Mono, who represents the current ballpark area, as in the Smiths ballpark, where the Bees will be leaving, said, I am tired of us being forced to play nice with Larry H. Miller Company and handle them with kid gloves. And I think that's when, Allie, we were like, Okay. Meanwhile, Councilmember Ale Puy, who is a West Side representative, will certainly represent a large swath of the area included in this Fair Park district, says the Miller Company screwed us and lied to our faces. Hoo doggy.
And because basically the way this went down is like we were hearing from so many different representatives of the West Side that they were on board with this idea, and they really felt like the Millers were acting in good faith. They were going to take a lot of feedback from residents, like that this was really going to be a community effort. And then as things were moving through the legislature, it became clear more and more that I think I would argue like some of those representatives even probably felt a little embarrassed, because it became clear to us that like, no, you were told that that's what this would look like. But the way it's panning out is they're getting what they want, and you're kind of being used as a pawn to make it seem like it's what everybody wants.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that. And, you know, again, there were multiple iterations of this bill, and Councilmember Puy, his text messages kind of take us through that process too. He says they seem to have moved significantly, like in helping Salt Lake get a little bit more of what they want. I'm guessing that was more representation on this board. Also, maybe a change in the way this district is funded. But yeah, he says that the city holds basically one card in this, and that's if the city is not on board with the idea of baseball, then the whole project tanks. And that's where Councilmember Mono comes in, and we've got a whole other layer to this, Allie.
Which I think this is the most interesting layer to it, which is Councilmember Mono says, Yes, but the mayor won't use those cards. She wouldn't with the bees. Pause. So what that's telling us is that though the city was acting like they were surprised that the Millers were taking the bees and this kind of came out of nowhere, no, in fact, like, there were people inside the city that knew that that was coming and weren't pulling every single lever to keep it from happening. Councilmember Mano says, "We played nice and kept everything quiet for over a year because we thought we could get them to stay. And you see how that worked out." Ouch. We scroll down a little bit. We get more from Councilmember Mano. "My worry is that the mayor thinks the positives of getting baseball outweigh the negatives of screwing over the West Side. Even if they adopt the changes, the entire West Side gets gentrified beyond control. And do you really think they are going to design this in a way that uplifts the West Side and actually care about anything beyond their borders?" Mm-hmm, it is. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll get this out of the way. It is vindicating to read that for me, because I just have felt so gaslit by the way that we've been talking about this proposal. Like, it's some sort of revelation for our city. And like, it's felt so bizarre to not be fully acknowledging what can happen when a billionaire supergroup buys and develops a huge swath of a neighborhood that is already undergoing massive gentrification and where a lot of people of color in our city live, and that's been historically redlined. Like, where we're seeing protests and fights over, like, the demolition of single-family homes that people are renting to build condos. Like, this whole conversation, for all of this to happen amidst that conversation, and for no one to be saying the quiet part out loud, gentrified beyond control, I felt like reading this, I was like, the council are normal.
I want to note, Councilmember Mano does not represent this area, right? We mentioned he's the other ballpark. He's also kind of like Liberty Wells. So this is east of I-15 primarily that I think he represents. Councilmember Pui and Councilmember Victoria Petro, they represent the West Side that will be most impacted by this particular project. But, you know, Mayor Mendenhall and Larry H. Miller Company, they've got statements in Blake's story here. And they're both kind of propping each other up in this, right? They both view this as a historic investment in the West Side. They maintain that they have a partnership in this project. And Allie, like, I think it's been hard to talk about this because there do seem to be two schools of thought here. And that is that the West Side does need investments. And, you know, I see comments from the Twitterverse that it's like, well, we can't just have like low income housing and homeless shelters here. Like, we need things. We need what you would normally find on the east side of the city. And then
grocery stores.
Yeah, grocery stores. And then you've got exactly what you said, which is like people being pushed out of their neighborhoods because of shiny new developments like market rate apartments, and you know, and then we lose those community members because they can't find another affordable place to live on the west side of Salt Lake City.
Which, to be clear, the city knows. The city did a study of gentrification within its boundaries. And one of the points that was made in that study called Thriving in Place is that there is nowhere affordable for people to move if they are forced out of their current living situation. So that's a conclusion the city itself has reached as an entity. Like, it knows that, right? But I think the thing, Emily, is like, when we interviewed Councilmember Victoria Petro on this show, she said something that I thought was incredibly insightful, which is, and she does represent the West Side, and though she was not, her texts were not grammar requested, she is mentioned in this exchange between the two council members. She said, "We need investment. We don't need transformation." And what she said, we often hear when we go to these kinds of community hearings or whatever, where some builder or some big idea haver wants to basically utilize land in our neighborhoods to develop, is like, this will be transformative for the neighborhood. This will be transformative. We don't need to be transformed. We're fine as we are. We have a strong identity. We have a strong culture. We love our neighborhoods. We love our neighbors. What we need is investment. And that doesn't mean like usurping land and reimagining it. That's resourcing the community to make its own decisions about what it needs, because like any other neighborhood, it deserves a lot of grocery stores.
And maybe like a seat at the table. Maybe more than two seats at the table.
Maybe more than two seats at the table.
So, Allie, I want to talk about some of the takeaways. Beyond that, this is a juicy, juicy story. One thing is that I want to applaud Blake Apgar for getting a records request in, because sometimes that's the only way we know as the public what is going on behind closed doors, right? This story lets the public in on this conversation because, like you said, we got those renderings of this sports and entertainment district. I think it was just like a couple weeks prior to the legislative session. And then late in the session, we had this bill revealed to make it all happen. So this kind of opens the door a little bit to the general public. I think one of the most interesting things, and maybe like most cynical thoughts I'm having, is that this shows that even though we elect people to enact a vision for our city, by golly, are these private interests shaping our future more than we than we may know. Yeah. And Council Chair Victoria Petro, in response to this story, said something that really struck me, which is she's worried about these text messages being public because, quote, there are real players at the table who have more leverage than me on any of my most powerful days, who will shape my community, the place where I raise my kids. And I'm like, even our council members are scared of, you know, this being in the sunlight.
Yeah.
Because of the power that, you know, the Larry H. Miller company has that other players have. So that's very striking to me.
Yeah. I mean, the thing, Emily, though, that I really appreciate about this being in the sunlight is that sometimes when elected officials who day to day profess their love for our city respond to these kinds of like once in a generation proposals with nothing but calm, I feel like a crazy person. Because when we, even you and I on this show, the way that we talk to each other about issues, the way that people talk to each other in this city about these kinds of deals, even if you're really excited about it, it is with like energy. And sometimes you swear and sometimes you're fierce and sometimes you have concerns. And like this, I guess what I'm saying is this is the kind of energy I would like to see in council meetings more often, because a lot of these screenshots that were in this Salt Lake Tribune story are from a group chat called like SLC Council 2024. Yeah. And side note, if you're in a group chat, isn't that a quorum? Like, but also just have that conversation in public. Like if council member Lopez Chavez thinks this funding deal is, quote, as is in this group chat, truly insidious, say that to us. We elected you to represent us. Like, get mad in the public meetings. Like, feel with us. I don't know. We're not going to judge you for raising your eyebrow.
Yeah.
And while we're on the subject of raising your eyebrow, like, we're headed into budget season. The mayor is going to propose her budget in May. The council will vote on that probably in June. The Salt Lake City Council still needs to vote on whether or not to approve raising sales tax across the city to fund a different but similar stadium deal for an NHL and NBA arena rebuild in downtown Salt Lake City. This sets up, it seems like, a bit of a conflict between the council and the mayor's office. I mean, these texts imply that she doesn't always pull all the levers she can for the city and that she might be weaker than she'd like us to think she is in some of these negotiations. Do you think that that's an unfair assessment, that like that they are in conflict with the mayor's office on this?
That's a good question, Allie. I mean, the text messages seem to show that they're not fully aligned. And you know, Councilmember Mano described himself in this story as like one of this ballpark proposal's less supportive council members. And again, he does not represent that portion of the city where this big Fair Park sports and entertainment district will have the most impact. So, you know, he's just one council member out of seven council members.
Though in the group chat, there seemed to be dismay from many of them and some like council staff.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see how they discuss this going forward. The truth of the matter is that the council doesn't have nearly as much of a say in this West Side project as they do in the downtown project, right, that you mm-hmm. just mentioned. And so it will really be up to, you know, the Fair Park, what is it, Reinvestment Authority? I don't know the proper name, but the board that is overseeing the Sports and Entertainment District on the West Side there. And I think what I would most be looking to in this project is how the legislature responds, you know, because we compared this to a different state authority that has previously usurped local land use and taxing authority from Salt Lake City. And I could see the legislature coming back and being like, oh, you all don't like this? Well, we'll take away one of your seats at the table, or we will make this worse for you in some way because we want this project to get done. So that's what I'm keeping my eye on in this Fair Park sports and entertainment proposal.
It is a situation where a bunch of people with varying degrees of power are all looking to leverage whatever power they can possibly find and muster. And that is the making of, frankly, a high-budget HBO drama. What we should say is, in terms of how this all moves forward, this Fair Park Authority, like, this all relies on Salt Lake City, the Millers, getting a deal with Major League Baseball. So if no deal is signed that gives Salt Lake City or Utah a Major League Baseball team, the authority lapses. That said, the authority can start collecting tax revenue from the district on July 1st of this year. So they're kind of moving forward, but also have a stopgap for not moving forward if it doesn't happen. And that's where we are now.
Stay tuned.
Mother's Day is on the horizon, and the good news is that you can find everything you need at Harmon's. Whether it's a little something to brighten Mom's day or a memorable spread, here are a few ideas. For breakfast, try Harmon's house-baked cinnamon rolls with freshly squeezed orange juice and a package of fresh-cut strawberries. If you're spicing it up with Bloody Marys, don't forget that Harmon's has an olive bar with over 12 different varieties. Now, flowers are the perennial favorite, and you can order online or pop by the store last minute, shop succulents, potted plants, and elaborate arrangements. May's flower of the month is the hydrangea, very appropriate. Hydrangeas are fragrant and elegant. And if sweets are in order, Harmon's has added raspberry to their selection of brownie flavors. Find all mom's favorites at your local Harmon's or order online at harmonsgrocery.com. Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita. A delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave, and they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo. I don't know how you spent your Easter, Emily. Actually, I do know you were making biscuits, right?
Yeah, and they turned out great. Thanks for asking. Good. Did you go to the Bunny Hop?
You know what? I didn't. I ended up hosting an Easter brunch at my house. And by the time that wrapped up, it was late enough in the afternoon. And I was so full of Prosecco that I kind of just fell asleep.
You could not hop anywhere.
I could not hop. I was weighted down. But here's how some Salt Lake City employees spent Easter Sunday. Fielding angry calls from the neighbors of a 114-year-old historic building that were watching a bulldozer try and take it down Easter Sunday morning, though that bulldozer did not have a permit.
Oh my gosh.
Because what is this thing called? It's a former LDS meeting house, but it has a name.
The Fifth Ward Meeting House. It's on
Fifth Ward Meeting House.
3rd West, 300 West, and about 740 South, like right near Ruby Snap Cookies, I believe.
That's exactly where it is. And it's kind of sits adjacent to Kilby Court, like they back up to each other. And this building, it's listed on the local register of historic places, which means that if you want to demolish it, you have to get a demolition permit issued by Salt Lake City. And then, according to Rachel's SLC history, that permit has to also be approved by the Historic Landmark Commission of Salt Lake City.
So as soon as the city learned about this demolition, they issued a stop work order, which means get the heck out of here. You are not allowed to tear this building down. And apparently city code points to the owner having to restore the building now since it, you know, illegally demolished it.
That's the craziest part of this story, because does that just mean that they literally have to go back now and brick by brick rebuild it? I mean, if you hit something with a bulldozer, it's in pretty bad shape. Like the photos, it's not going to be easy to just put some pieces back.
Right, right. I mean, what did you say? It's 114 years old?
Yeah. I mean, you hit anything 114 years old with anything and it's going to be
in
bad shape.
Yeah.
Did you see the quote in the Building Salt Lake article from Nick Norris, the Salt Lake City planning director, that when, I guess, they were asked, the people who were doing the demo, they tried to say that they had a permit. He said they took off and police were called. So I'm just picturing them like dropping their hatchets.
Like
they're like running down the street.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Like peeling out in a front loader or something.
Yeah.
Well, what's remarkable, Allie, is that the manager of this property says he doesn't know how this happened, but like, what? Do we have, like, vigilante construction crews demolishing historic buildings or something?
On Easter Sunday? Nobody in this country wants to work on Easter Sunday. Like, what? It's so bizarre.
Right.
And the owner's response was like, well, he was like, yes, like, I have partners in, like, this venture, and I'm not going to drag them into the mud. Like, it's very unfortunate. It's all very unfortunate.
It is all very unfortunate. And,
that's true.
You know, a lot of people were up in arms about this. People who said, oh, I love this building, or I loved this this neighbor who said she saw a Nirvana concert in this building like decades ago.
Okay, but Fox 13, I have to hand it to them. They dug up the poster advertising that concert that she went to in that building in the 90s. And it was Dinosaur Jr. with special guest Nirvana. And it was an all ages, no alcohol show.
Oh my gosh. That makes sense since it was a former LDS ward, but.
Yeah, apparently the venue was called the Pompadour, a punk venue.
Yeah, yeah. But this opens up a lot of questions for me, Allie. One, who gave the demo order? I guess we'll find out what happens there. Two, what is gonna go there? Like, I didn't even know there was something planned for that location. I mean, if I had to guess, I would guess apartments, but I'm not sure. And yeah, has the planning commission discussed this at all? Like, is there any application at the city level for what's going to be built at this location? I'm not sure.
It seems like there isn't because, I mean, the city said there were no work permits requested. So wouldn't that be part of submitting an application to redesign?
And neighbors seemed obviously incredibly surprised by this. And, you know, like, once there's something being developed in your neighborhood, you usually get, like, at least a flyer. So it feels like this came out of nowhere. And then my last question to you, Allie, is why do you think people care so much about losing these historic buildings in our community?
I mean, here's the deal, Emily. It's like, yes, Easter Sunday is technically a slow news day, but I cannot believe the way that throughout the day, every time I opened any social media app, what I was being served up was photos of this building being demolished.
Yeah.
It just felt, in the grand scheme of things, so kind of small. Like, again, given, you know, the story we talked about in the first part of this episode, the explosive text exchange between two city council members, which I heard basically nothing about over the weekend. And people I brought it up with were like, huh, what? But then someone tries to take down this like tiny little building sandwiched between Roots Coffee and Ruby Snap on 3rd West. And it's like the whole internet is losing its mind. I have to wonder if we just are starting to have almost like a trauma response to developers busting our balls. And I think this is like all of us just kind of emotionally feeling like the demolition, the rapid changes that are happening in this city, regardless of whether or not, you know, the people in charge of these decisions or people who value a lot of the development that's happening in this city think it's good or bad, I think for the average person, it feels a little out of hand. And this just felt like the realization of our feelings that it's all getting a little out of hand, because this was literally out of hand.
Yeah. We're clinging to any remnants of the city we knew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're also just feeling like, oh, so now they don't, now they're not even, I mean, you and I talked last week about like how the developers don't follow the city code of not just completely eliminating portions of the sidewalk when they want to get things done. And the city doesn't even have the resources to be enforcing that code, which like, if you think about the ways that Salt Lake City Corporation intersects with the day-to-day life of Salt Lakers, that is where the rubber meets the road, my friend, is the existence of a sidewalk, you know? So we can't even, the city's telling us they don't even have the resources to enforce. And it's like, okay, so we can't even really keep this under control.
Yeah.
And they're sneaking around on a high holiday to get it done. Like, it's kind of embarrassing for everyone.
Yeah, feels kind of icky.
Yeah, I think that's it, right? But you always say this thing, and I feel like this is a bit of peeling back the curtain to share with listeners, but this is an Emily Means quote, which is, in order to be a good reporter, you have to be a conspiracy theorist.
don't quote me to me.
I don't know. I just feel like that's the theme of this roundup, is like, if your spidey senses tell you that what you're being told is not what's happening, you should trust them.
Yep. Wow, whoever said that was really smart.
Someone should make them the boss.
Mother's Day is on the horizon, and the good news is that you can find everything you need at Harmon's. Whether it's a little something to brighten mom's day or a memorable spread, here are a few ideas. For breakfast, try Harmon's house-baked cinnamon rolls with freshly squeezed orange juice and a package of fresh-cut strawberries. If you're spicing it up with Bloody Marys, don't forget that Harmon's has an olive bar with over 12 different varieties. Now, flowers are the perennial favorite, and you can order online or pop by the store last minute, shop succulents, potted plants, and elaborate arrangements. May's flower of the month is the hydrangea, very appropriate. Hydrangeas are fragrant and elegant. And if sweets are in order, Harmon's has added raspberry to their selection of brownie flavors. Find all mom's favorites at your local Harmon's or order online at harmonsgrocery.com. Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita, a delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave, and they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo.
Let's do shout outs and get out of here.
Okay, Allie, I wanted to shout out an opportunity for Salt Lake renters. There is going to be a renter resource fair this Wednesday, April 3rd. The Central City Neighborhood Council is hosting this in partnership with Salt Lake City Municipal. And it's for all Salt Lake City residents and beyond. They're going to have some resources there from Salt Lake County as well. Basically, it's an opportunity for you to learn about your rights as a renter, to meet other renters, to connect with legal services and landlord-tenant mediation. And, Allie, there's free dinner. So I think it is a great reason to show up.
Yeah. Say no more.
And that is Wednesday, April 3rd from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Main City Library.
I also have to promo an episode that we did on this show a couple years ago, and we kind of make a habit of rerunning it every spring, which is everything you need to know before you sign your lease in this state. There's kind of a boilerplate lease or rental agreement that a lot of landlords use, and there are some kind of sneaky things in there that we should all as renters be aware of before we sign it. I will link it in the episode description here. Share it with a friend, because it's a good resource.
Agreed. What's your shout out, Allie?
Okay, my shout out is to the State Room, which is an iconic music venue right on State Street near downtown, because Monday, April 1st was the 15th birthday of the State Room, which is kind of crazy. I think I look at that building and that operation, and I think it has to be more than 15 years old because it's so iconic. But then when I hear the date, April 1st, 2009, I'm like, the first year of the Obama presidency? Like, that was 100 million years ago. I think the State Room is probably one of the best, probably up there with Kilby Court, venues that we have in this city. The State Room itself has evolved over 15 years into the State Room Presents, which books everything from, like, you know, Deer Valley Concert Series to, like, Red Butte to stuff at the Eccles. They do such a nice job bringing a variety of acts into this town. I think about how the city around this little standalone building has transformed in the past 15 years.
Oh, yeah.
And what we know about how State Street is going to transform over 15 more years. And I just got to give them a shout out, from the creative booking to the iconic church pews inside. Chris and Darren and the whole team that make it happen, shout out to you. Happy 15th birthday, State Room.
That's really nice, Allie. A little romantic, a little nostalgic. I love these feelings.
Yeah. That's right. Imagine if someone tried to take a wrecking ball to that.
Listen, don't even speak it. It could happen. Vigilante right. Construction crews out there, okay?
That's right. The developer issues a statement in Building Salt Lake that's just like, oops.
Who, me?
Who, me? All right. Emily Means, have a great day.
Have a great day, Allie.
That is all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. We will be back tomorrow morning with more from around this city. Bye.